It's Monday and time for the Back to Business podcast, featuring Calgary's industry leaders. Welcome today's show host, Kim Hayden.
Quick question for you. I know you don't want to answer. We don't want to know the answer, but we've got to face the facts. How much did that last tank of gas cost you? Well, a few weeks ago, I had an opportunity to sit down with Joseph Schachner of the Schachner Report. You probably have seen him talk on energy and the energy market and where the opportunities lie and what is in it for Canada. So stay tuned. This is an episode you're going to want to listen to. But first, our land acknowledgement. We here at the Calgary Petroleum Club, in the spirit of reconciliation, honor and acknowledge that the land on which we learn, work, and live is Treaty 7 region of Southern Alberta. This place is the traditional homeland for the First Nations and Métis peoples, and today we all are part of this treaty land. Welcome back to the show, Joseph.
Glad to be with you again.
I have learned a lot around business and natural resources and over the journey since we initially sat down, because you really got me thinking about what do we have here? Like, what are we doing? Like, where is Canada? Why is Canada in the position? Why are we at a $54,000 GDP versus a $72,000 GDP? So really, you got me thinking around what is Canada capable of? I would like to actually kick off the show with, so folks, we're going to make sure in the show notes we have the link to the first interview we did back in July 2023. And I'd like you to just take it from there. Tell me about the journey between July 2023 and today. What are you seeing in the markets? And, you know, what feels different to you?
Well, the thing is, Canada has always been a great opportunity for resources. You know, everything from forest products, lumber in the East Coast, mining in the eastern part of the country, offshore Newfoundland, Hibernia. So, oil's been not just an Alberta situation. It's been, commodities have been a real positive for, Eastern Canada. And then you go into Saskatchewan, you've got uranium is the biggest one in the world. And then canola, which of course just had a big day with, Scott Moe being in China with the deal that was done to allow Chinese EVs into Canada. And then you come to Alberta, oil, natural gas, and, in the past, coal and forest products. And then BC, of course, a lot of everything. So we are a resource country, just like Australia. And so when we have everything working, both in terms of decent commodity prices, we're not talking, top dollar commodity price, even though gold and silver are, $5,000 on gold now, $100 on silver, uranium prices taking off. Energy has lagged. And historically, the biggest component of the CRB, the Commodity Research Bureau, is energy. And energy has been partially impacted by geopolitics, partially be impacted in Canada by takeaway capacity, especially natural gas. And then the issue of the fact that our oil, for the most part, is heavier crude, which trades at a discount to light crude, WTI. So when you look at it, Canada has the opportunity to really grow its production. Let me put Canada in context. The United States total oil and liquids produces about 23.5 million barrels a day. And that probably will be flat because the price right now, you've heard from Harold Hamm at Continental Resources say, the Bakken is not economic at this point and we're not drilling any more wells. And they were a big player there. So $60 is a tough price. And the president of the United States wanting $50 oil just doesn't make any sense because the industry in the States won't be able to drill and make a profit, which they won't do because they have shareholders and economics matter. And then you take the second biggest is 10.1, 10.2 would be Saudi Arabia. Then you go just under that 10 million, which would be Russia. And the fourth largest is Canada, 6.1 million barrels a day between oil and liquids. And behind us is China at 4.2. So we really are a juggernaut that could grow more. The industry believes that with more approvals for oil sands and the expansions and SAGD, we could be 7 or 8 million barrels if the economics and the takeaways were there. And economics means you've got to have a high enough price to do it. And of course, every greenfield project costs more and more.
Now we're dealing with governance. Governance is always in the mix in Canada.
Yeah. And of course, this whole approval process that that we're talking about now with the government. And one thing that I'm hearing, which is kind of a little disconcerting, is that Shell and one of the Japanese owners of the LNG Canada project are looking to sell their interest. And if they wouldn't be doing that if they thought the project would justify phase two being approved and then selling it later when it was up and running. So maybe they don't like the economics, or maybe it's just a way to say to the government, if you want us to stay and build phase two, we have to have a better regulatory environment to do it. So it could be a poker card, or it could be that they really don't see the economics out of Canada being as attractive as it needs to be. The only other project that's moving ahead is Cedars, which is, from the most recent reports, is 70% completed. Enbridge is one of the owners, and that will be, and then others are waiting for FID, final investment decision.
Now, not being in the trading space myself, and not being born in this country, just learning about the country over the last, 25 years of my life, 30 years of my life, it seems to me that Canada could punch much higher above the belt than it does, and that there seems to be a lot of that the provinces individually have a bit more, maybe a bit too much sway as into how we develop out these natural resources and move them offshore to other countries, to other places that want the reality. We treat everybody really darn good here. I would rather buy something from Canada than to buy something where people are subjugated or one step above slavery, right? So the thoughts around where we're moving right now, I'm hearing a lot of talk about from the new government and with everything that's going on around resource exploration. So you mentioned gold, and everybody goes, oh, well, who's wearing all this gold? Well, gold is needed for all the technology we're building, right? What are some of the things when we look optimistically, what are some of the things that we could vote for, some of the things that we could shift of resources that are sitting here in Canada that the world wants that we're not providing?
I think everything we talked about earlier is on the plate. It's just, if you want to build a gold mine in Quebec, you've got to go through all the approvals there. You got to go through the federal approvals. Take the timeline from 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, dragging it out to a 6-month window. And so the industry, the government and the, federal and provincial governments and industry have to come up with a process where the approvals can happen a lot quicker. And then once, if you have an idea, if you do one precious metals mine, you know what the issues are. You know the issues of water in the area. You know the issues of contaminant. You know the issues of indigenous, responsibility and to them and to, and in terms of environment and work and the rest of it. So the thing is, the industry should, once they get a template, be able to cookie cutter that to the next deal on the mining side. The same thing with forest products, the same thing with energy. The big problem with energy is takeaway capacity. And, we still have maybe 300,000 barrels a day of export capacity on TMX. They say they could expand that. Again, how many billions to do that? The efficiency of TMX, the cost structure has just gone blown out. But then you could say the private sector, the same thing. Coastal Gas for TransCanada blew out in terms of costs versus the original budget. So everything going through the mountains there and all the issues related to it and the delays and the cost of inputs, be it the pipe, be it compressors, all that stuff, a lot of that has gone up, and because of the shortages globally, so Caterpillar can charge a lot more for their big equipment. And so I think we need to figure out how we can do it in a speedier process, how the economics can be determined so that the government knows if we have $75 oil, what projects can be moved forward, and then let the industry come up and say, we want to bid to build our project. So we need to have, the problem is labor.
Yes.
You can't have three projects going at the same time.
Exactly.
Because there's just not enough labor. So you need to orchestrate it in a timeline where one project's done, the labor's still there, they can go to project number two, the employees will like it because they will then go from project to project. And make a good living, not sit on on the sidelines without work, which is
not that's
good.
Better for the government.
And they leave the industry.
Taxpayers.
They go from the energy industry to another industry, and then they don't come back. So you've got to make sure that all of this can be fine-tuned. And if it is, I think it'll be very, very good for workers. It'll be very good for the industry. And we will finally see a schedule of increased capacity in almost every industry, be it, precious metals, be it, nickel or copper, all of these could see incremental production if we end up having a system that allows for consistency and for reliability and for the industry to say the economics make sense.
We've had a couple projects that have had nothing but success in the sense of when we're looking at partnerships, Indigenous partnerships. So Kitimat, there's been some really positive from the Indigenous that have spoken as to their participation, not the ones standing on the sidelines, protesting. And you know what? I'm going to put this out here, folks. If you're driving a big pickup truck and you pull out a blue tarp from Rona or Home Hardware to sit on the ground, I want you to understand your carbon footprint and what you're utilizing. And when you boycott Canadian utilization of its natural resources in ethical manners, then you're actually boycotting livelihood and growth and what else we can do when we have a well-funded society. So nothing irritates me more than when I see people protesting and they've got those big blue tarps, because those big blue tarps are nothing but petroleum product, right? So, but I've gone down the rabbit hole. So let's talk about alternatives. So one of the things that we have seen as of recent, which I think is actually exciting if we can actually get everything in place, is reducing those interprovincial barriers and starting to create conversations, right? I know that Wapkinoe he's working really diligently in Manitoba to bring industry there and partnerships and such. That's another thing that's been happening that I don't think a lot of people are aware of, is Port of Churchill.
Correct.
So let's talk about this, because this is something you and I agree on. I have always looked north to the Arctic and not understood why we as Canada, A, don't have proper hubs up there to protect it, B, are not leveraging it, because it's the fastest route, most efficient way to get east or west. What are some of the thoughts around that? Because I'm gathering you have more understanding of just the movement of the energy or resources.
Everybody conceptually has thought Churchill would be a great place, especially with 7-8 months of the year now, where you're able to move product from there to Europe, especially would be the big market potential there. The problem was the rail needed to be upgraded to handle heavier and heavier loads. The ground, as you get to Churchill, muskeg soft, it needs to be reinforced. And then, of course, the ports need to be able to handle the grains. And so the first project was, of course, the Richardson family with Pioneer Grain. was to move that, and then, of course, other seeds and all, everything else. So it's really the agriculture sector that's been the one that's gained the most. But over time, you can improve and build out those ports to be able to handle, you know, medium-sized ships. You're not going to have those big...
The big tankers, or the
crude carriers carrying 1 million or 2 million barrels. But you could have ones that can carry 500,000 barrels, and then maybe they go to a port on the East Coast, or maybe they just, you know, go straight to Europe, and the efficiencies and economics are there for those ships. And we can send the heavy oil, the light oil, all those things that people could use there, or product, you know, from oil, you know, be it propane or anything else, butanes, whatever people want, could be available to market there. The cost will be significant to do that.
To upgrade everything.
So is it going to be something that the Port of Churchill can do with support from Manitoba? Will it require a major investment as well from the federal government? Will it require a First Nations buy-in so that they own part of it, just like we're talking Coastal GasLine? They need to be part of it. And as you said, the premier of the province of Manitoba is all in on this, and he would then be able to, you know, negotiate with the First Nations and say, okay, this thing's going to cost $10 billion. We're prepared to provide you with the equity portion, and then we'll find a way to handle the debt. And then the federal government will own this, provincial government will own this, maybe the city of Churchill will own some, maybe some of the private sector will want to own in as well. And then we'll see if it goes. It's, you know, think about, you know, what is it? Was it 409 in Toronto? Started out as a, you know, as a, you know, private sector. Now pension funds love it,
yes,
because it's a consistent winner. You know, everybody on their car has one of those, you know, little tags, and of course the revenues keeps on going up and up because of usage. So if we can get something like that where usage pays it and the rates are economic for the users, then we could see, you know, that become an economic project that over time pension funds buy, because it has a consistent 8-9% with growth. And of course, that's what they need for their retirements, you know, pension obligations. So it could be a big thing. And the other thing we were talking about is, you know, the growth of the industry. You could do something in Ontario, Sault Ste. Marie or whatever, where you could have ships go in against smaller ships that can go through, you know, all the way to, you know, the coast on the East Coast. And that would be another way to move and build that up. So that's in, you know, northwestern Ontario. And then, of course, rail. I don't want to use rail, but we use a lot of rail. You look at, you know,
east to west and south.
And I think, you know, from an environment point of view, we've seen too many rail, derailments and disasters and deaths and all that. I would rather not use rail. If we can do pipelines, let's do that. If we can do shipping, let's do that. So there's a lot of ways to move the product.
Yeah.
The, you know, one of the easiest ways, of course, would move more west. But we have a premier there who, and a lot of people who are opposed to it. So it needs over time for them to realize, number one, it can be done very, very safely. Have we had a leakage at anything out of TMX exports? No. Everybody talks about Exxon Valdez. Well, Exxon Valdez had a long time ago. Ships were very different then. They didn't have the safety. They didn't have double hulled in many cases.
Don't even get me going on the noise pollution and dirt that cruise ships leave. Cruise ships are brutal, and yet there's no taking into that. It's like, you know, one industry, they hit bad water and everything spills into the ocean and they disorient whales. And then the other industry, which has had issues in past, has seen to it and addressed those issues.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. That is the part of me that has looked at, you know, understanding that it is a fine balancing act. You know, as a mother of three amazing young adults, and one of my children had learning challenges, I was very grateful to all the people who advocated on what we would consider more liberal platforms to ensure that my daughter had a scribe in high school and assistance through technology. So I'm looking at the balance for all Canadians, right? I'd love to get your take on the Prime Minister's one sector of his talk when he talks about middle powers coming together. And this really got me thinking. If we had been able to get energy and had a prime minister in the position when the EU and Germany came and said, this is what's going on. We need assistance. And then we said, we'll send you hydrogen. We did not say we'd send you natural gas. We did not say we'd send you oil. This is my thoughts. As like I said, I mentioned I'm a mother of three, and I'm going to break this really down into simplistic forms. If your kid's not behaving, you send them to their room, and they're lucky if they get dinner, because we want them to think about it. And by the way, you can go clean it, and maybe I'll find some other chores for you. I'm not going to reward that kid with more allowance money. So when we look at what Russia is doing, what could we do differently today with this new focus on middle powers coming together, with this new focus on working with the EU and working with the Baltic Eight and working with the Scandinavian countries? What could we do today, if we started today, to help alleviate the countries that are being forced to buy Russian fuel, Russian gas, Russian oil?
Yeah,
I know that sounds mean, and I'm not, and you know what? They're going to be good Russians. It's just that right now the leadership there is perpetrating on another country.
Yeah.
Right?
So first thing, Europe is still buying some oil and oil products, not crude oil, but oil products from Russia. Some Hungary and others that are willing to do that. Natural gas is still going in, and Europe is trying to get off of it because the ones that are closest to Russia, the pipes are there, and the pipes are still moving gas. So there's inconsistencies there. So logistics matter, and there's no easy solution on these logistics. As we talked about Churchill, we need that. We need a problem, solve problems on the West Coast. One of the things that kind of annoys me the most is the United States does not allow, you know, rail cars off of Washington and Oregon with coal coming in from Wyoming and other places, and yet they come to BC. But if a Canadian company is wanting to ship anything to the West Coast, they have to put tarps on it so nothing gets blown around, and, you know, if the wind picks up.
Yeah.
And yet the coal cars coming out of the United States do not have to have that coverage.
Oh.
And so if you live in South Surrey, you've got coal dust all over your homes. And if you had Canadian coal going out, it would be covered. So if Teck had coal going to the coast, it would cover it. If American coal goes, it's not covered. So there's very inconsistencies on this environment stuff coming out of the BC government and the federal government. I would say that's an easy no-brainer to say all product going out has to have certain environmental protections for the people living there. And yet I've been in South Surrey, and what time of year was it? I think spring, and you'd see coal dust everywhere near the water, which and the housing and stuff, and they have to clean it up. So we've got to find a solution to that. But getting back to this whole thing with inconsistencies and Europe in the middle countries getting together, we can do that from a point of view of conceptual. But in terms of us shipping hydrogen, which is non-event, it's just not that off the ground. The economics don't work.
I am not an engineer. I'm not. And I'm sitting here going, wait a minute. That sounds like he promised nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounded. And of course, Germany walked away saying,
yeah, exactly.
Wake up, guys. You don't know what you're talking about. And so, you know, going through the East Coast all the way through Quebec, you know, Quebec's not in there. We've heard from the leader of the PQ that they're
going
to
don't even get me going on Quebec. I know. So
the key thing is you can't go east all the way. You're needing to go north, and you need to go west, and you need to go south. Well, south is a problem now. Natural gas, they still consume a lot of Canadian natural gas, and they need it because they're exporting so much LNG from the U.S. right now. You're 18 to 20 BCF. That's going to go up to 30 BCF in the next 5-6 years. So they're not bringing on enough. The industry is not spending enough money, not only to replace declines, but to grow production to meet the export capacity.
Infrastructure. We've ridden the 1950 infrastructure and think it's going to handle 2025, you know, populace, energy demands, technology. And I'm glad that you're bringing attention to that, because right now is the opportunity. Thoughts around the middle powers?
Well, we can agree to do things together politically You can't really challenge the U.S. You know, they do have, they are Rome. They are Britain during the Victorian age. They might is right in their world.
Might is right. I agree. Might and money.
Yeah. And we saw, you know, with the, you know, right now there's an aircraft carrier group. I think it's the Abraham Lincoln, you know, battle group now heading into the Indian Ocean to let the Iranian mullahs, the Ayatollahs, know you start, you know, killing more of your people. And there's people fought 12,000. There are reports I saw this morning, it could be 20 or 30,000 people and hundreds of thousands arrested and, you know, and detained, and nobody knows if they're alive or not. So the numbers are getting staggering. And so, you know, there's even reports that the Ayatollah's families are taking their money out and putting it in Dubai and other places just in case, their insurance policy to have some money that they've ripped off from the country. So I think that there's, you know, geopolitical events that will continue to affect, the wars and price of energy. And the middle countries really can't do anything on that. So I think what they need to do is do things that where they support each other related to Greenland, you know, putting in forces there. The Americans are not going to attack Canadian and Denmark and British forces and stuff like that. And so you need to be able to unite on things that make sense, that you can use to make the American government, pull back from. You know, like Trump likes to throw out, like, because he's a real estate deal.
Because that's, but, you know, he goes the extreme and then he pulls back. And he finds back, out. Yeah.
And then he gets what he wants. You know, he may have only, he asked for 10 times and he wants one or two times what he was looking for. And he gets it, and, you know, which is the art of the deal that he does. But it just annoys everybody because, you know, we're facing 100% tax because we're allowed to, we're prepared to allow 49,000 you know, Chinese EVs under $35,000 Canadian to come into the country, you know, starting in the coming months. So, look, the
as long as they don't get the EV free drive on the roads for free, I think we've done enough to bring EVs and green and you know what, if you're listening, don't send me the hate mail. I'm not the producer of this show. I'm just speaking my opinion. But the reality is, it is all balancing. It's not right. It's not left. The answers are always in the center. And yes, we got EVs up and running. They are one component to a greener earth. One. They're not the answer. And we gave everybody the tax break where you didn't have to pay for the roads you were driving on, although EVs are harder on roads just due to their weight. Yeah. No more freebies. No more freebies. If I have to pay a tax on the oil I'm putting in or the gas I'm putting in my car, that tax also goes to the roads. So I think that there is definitely a reconfiguring and critical thinking. I think that's the number one thing that people need to get back to, is some critical thinking in this. And at the end of the day, we're still living in the cold north in a resource-filled country, with people who like to skate around and hit things with a stick. And we have to preserve that way of life. And I do like the middle powers of, you know, us maybe consuming less. Does your kid need 42 Barbies? Come on, folks. No. Right? Let's talk about that kid's future. So let's close this out, Joseph. I want to talk about, we know gold is at 5,000. We know that China is divesting itself of American treasury bonds right now. We know that a lot of countries are divesting. So the likelihood that the American dollar is going to slip again is it's the writing on, is on the wall, right? And they have a reason for that. They're driving that dollar down for a reason. This is not an accident. So, but let's talk here at home. I'm part of the silver tsunami, the recipient my parents have just passed. I've inherited $150,000 cash after everything is paid and divvied up between me and my three siblings. So we now have our money to invest. What are the things that we should be looking at here in Canada to invest within our energy sector? Because everybody needs lights. Everybody needs warmth. Energy will be the, like, it's Barbies will come and go. Energy is here forever, right? So talk to me about where I should be taking that money that and investing.
Well, again, as we get older, we want more conservative investments. We want dividend income so we can have a, you know, income coming in when we retire and no longer have other income coming in. So there's so many places you can go. The pipelines and infrastructure companies have, you know, 6-7% yields when, you know, when you get those buy opportunities like we did in April of 2025. And then you're going to have, you know, energy companies, some of the biggest ones in Canada, you know, Whitecap Resources and others that are paying very high dividend yields, Surge Energy, others, where they can even get, you even get money on a monthly basis. So what you need to do is sit down with your investment advisor, look at your whole portfolio, not only what you, you know, your mortgage issues, your cash flow, what money you think you're going to spend in retirement, and then decide how much you want to have in energy. Banks provide decent yields at times. You know, the stocks have done extremely well, so the yields are down. But if we do have any pullback in the markets, then that would be a window to take advantage of that. Utilities have, you know, decent yields. So I think that, you know, look for that income portion. And then again, we're bullish, very bullish longer term. I'm in the camp when the majority of people are using $55 and $60 oil for 2026. I'm using $70 oil, and I think we'll be $80 oil yep. at the end of 2026 and better in 2027. That's going to provide great opportunities, lots of cash flow of the industry, and they will be able to, number one, if they have a debt problem, resolve that. Number two, do more shareholder returns, either NCIB, normal course issuer bid, buying back stock, or they'll be able to increase the dividend, do special dividends, like we've seen Tourmaline do and Hemisphere and other companies pay special dividends, and then grow internal growth. Our focus right now for our research at Chapter Energy Research is companies that can have great balance sheets or very strong ones or getting stronger, two, that have a growth window, that have the projects internally where at the price of oil that they need for their tier one inventory be, remember, we have a 1.37 Canadian dollar to the U.S. So if you're ending up getting, you know, $61 U.S., then that's going to be a better price. But if we end up with 75 and 80 and we have a, you know, a dollar 20 Canadian dollar, i.e., you know, close to 80 cents, you've got to make sure the economics work. But if they do, they're going to push the pedal on growth. And what you want to do is find companies that have that inventory of the land where they can say, okay, based on price, the tier two inventory is now tier one, tier three inventory is tier two. And if the price of oil goes to, you know, 100 or 120, now people think that's crazy. But in 2008, we went into a period where there was a shortage. Inventories went down. We are at 88 days of inventory right now. Global inventories in 2020, when we had the COVID and the industry shut down and demand fell, got up to 120 days. Within 6 months, they were down in the 90s and then below that. And if you go to 2008, we got down to 78 days. And that price spike went from 90 to 147 in 6 months. So people don't realize how at the margin things can move very, very quickly. So when I'm saying that I'm looking for $70 oil for the average for 2026, you just go back the last 3 years and put the median price on and it's north of 70. And so if we start eating into those global inventories that people are talking about, oh, there's a global excess. There is no global excess. Just pull out the history and the data. It's there to look at. And people just throw it out. It's like Goebbels, you know, telling you that there's an oil surplus. There's no oil surplus. The data proves it clearly.
Well, I know the EAU is working diligently to start diversifying out. So they're putting energies into other things, which means there's less energies going into direct oil. They want to see diversification of their dollar. We have global conflicts happening. Iran, we start launching planes over there. What if planes, they don't fly on wishes and you know, fairy wings. They take fuel. And, you know, it's not going to be hydrogen. Sorry, Trudeau. It's not going to be hydrogen. I just think that that's hearing a calmer voice like yourself and having the optimism within there is really important. I think invest wisely, invest with your appetite, and The world is not going to stop turning tomorrow, folks. So, you know, may we all live to 110 with our faculties and our movement. But we need to get better prepared, because pension funds for people under 40, probably not going to happen. So you have to think about your own pension fund. Joseph, you have a newsletter. Let's talk real quick before we close out the show. Where can people find you and follow you? You are, you're on, I think, the expert that's brought onto three different shows. And you also have a newsletter and a an investor guide that people can actually subscribe to. Can you take us through that real quick?
Yeah, we were talking to people about it, and from the institutional side of, you know, for pension funds and big mutual funds and others, they get a lot of access to management, and they can see management regularly. They can talk to them. There's presentations, there's webcasts. For the individual investor, there was a vacuum. So we decided we were going to create a product in 2017 that would fill that vacuum. And we originally planned to cover 20 companies, mid-sized companies. And then over time, we decided to increase it. We brought in a bigger team, and we're now covering 32 companies. And what we do is we cover Canadian companies that are working the liquid side, in the natural gas side, the energy service side, and we cover some royalty companies, and we also cover companies that are Canadian that work around the world. We have Canadian companies working in Thailand, in Colombia, in Brazil, in Trinidad. And so, you know, they bring the most modern technology that's been developed in Canada and around the world, you know, and take it around the world. So we cover that on a research basis, and that's called the Schachter Energy Report. So go to www.schachterenergyreport.ca, and you can see the product. There's some free examples there that you can do it. And that's a subscriber product with an annual or a quarterly price tag. We also do something called on a macro basis, which is called Eye on Energy. That's something that we do every Wednesday, except Thursdays if Monday's a U.S. holiday and the EIA data doesn't come out till Thursday. And that is a thing that covers the geopolitics, the economics, what's going on in energy, where do we see prices moving in the near term. And we do that on Substack for people who don't buy the full SCR product. Those who get the full SCR product get Eye on Energy included. So we've done that, and it's really worked out well. And then on top of that, what we did is match that with a conference. And that conference is called the Catch the Energy. Very good one for people to do it. We hold it usually in October. The Calgary Petroleum Club is a great marketing sponsor with us. And there's a ticket that are available usually at the front desk for people to take and sign in. And then they can come to it. Last year, we had, 650 people attend.
Wow.
At Royal University. We use the Roderick Ma Hall and the Bella Hall. And in the past, we've had opening of it by our premier, then our energy minister. And I usually do a macro and how to spend your day. And the key thing is we have between 35 and 45 companies, depending upon how we configure the space, making presentations. And so we have the largest companies would be like a Tourmaline and a Birchcliff and names like that. And then we have, you know, smaller companies that can be 2,000 BOEs a day, like a Southern or, you know, a Hemisphere. So we give people the option of seeing them. And that FaceTime, not only do they get to see them in a presentation room, but they also go to the booths and go and talk to them. And having the ability to sit there with and talk to a Paul Coburn at Surge or, Chris Carlson at Birchcliff or, you know, Dan Halleck at a Total Energy. All of those are very, very valuable. And for retail investors, it's really the only opportunity because AGMs just aren't what they used to be.
No.
And they're virtual, and you really don't have a chance to ask questions.
And in-person is on the rise. It's people want to reconnect in-person. And I just think we get so much more when we can look somebody in the eyes. We can gauge what their intention is, what their authority is. You know, the truth of what they're saying when we're actually directly in a room with somebody.
Yeah. And what I tell people is there are no dumb questions. If it's something on your mind, the companies want you to become an investor. They want you to feel comfortable with your investment. They want you to be a long-term investor. So not a trader, not a speculator, but they want the support of individuals as well as the institutional market. And so they will be there to answer those questions, and they're very, very happy to do it because many of them today, which have a massive following on the institutional side, started out as small companies where they needed retail investors. It's only when they got big enough that the institutions would come after them that they got that following. So they, many of them remember it, and they are willing to come to this conference. So for people who are members of CPC, you'll have access to complimentary tickets through the front desk here downstairs. We're doing this taping upstairs, in the, one of the rooms here. But please take advantage of it. We want the people who are interested in the industry to come. We want them to meet the companies and chat with management, get a better feel for it. And if we've done that, then we at our company, Schachter Energy Research, have done our job.
I'm going to close this out with one question. You mentioned utilization of the CPC CalPE Club, Calgary Petroleum Club. A lot of young professionals are working almost in a silo. So they work very independent. They're professionals either in the finance space or I'm thinking applicable to what you're doing, or they're in the innovation space. So they're doing tech and such. What do you think is the benefit to these young professionals of a space like the Calgary Petroleum Club?
Well, it's first thing, it's a great place to meet. You know, so we come here and use it for lunches. We're going to start using it for meetings when we want to do something downtown and have people from downtown come, because we work out of the West End. Our office is in the West Side. And it's a great networking place. They have so much of it. When I read the emails, it's like, I want to do that. I want to do that. You know, there's so much out there. And a lot of it can be just, you know, taking family and friends out for one of the events there that they have. We're coming here for Easter. So this is going to air after Easter, but we're going to have a big luncheon for all of our family here at the, you know, in one of the rooms that we've arranged to take and be here for the Easter brunch. So the place is fabulous, networking. We were just sitting for a minute having coffee, and somebody was chatting with us because they knew the product and they had a little chat, and they knew who I was, and I introduced them to my wife and who was here. And so you never know where deals get done, and things here happen verbally. It's the old days when I came to Alberta in the 70s. It was your word is your bond, which is still today. And you talk things over. You did a deal, and then you shook hands, and the deal was the deal, and the lawyers were papering it over the way you wanted the deal. That's something about Calgary which is different from other places, where you go through meticulous legal and every, and the intent may end up changing. I think things here are a lot clearer. And I think the people who come from outside coming to the CPC, the networking is unbelievable. You have a good idea, people will listen. And if you have something that's a good idea that deserves financing, there are pockets of capital in Calgary that will support you. So this place is really important for that. And for young people especially, the CPC is very open. They have programs for you. They have things to do. They have networking sessions. And from an entertainment point of view, there's so much going on here. You have a speaker series. You have so much going on that I think it's very important for people, even if they're on the periphery technology side or a support, to the industry, the energy industry. Definitely take advantage of a CPC membership. I became a member in 1984. We were away for a number of years in Toronto, came back, we're members again, and we love using the space.
Thank you so much for coming, Joseph, and thank you for the optimism. Folks, there are so many opportunities in this world, but you have to choose to step into it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today on the Back to Business podcast. Be sure to visit calpeteclub.com, CalPeteClub.com, to find out more about upcoming events, networking opportunities, and membership. If you are not already a valued member at the CPC, where we are proudly connecting and supporting Calgary's business leaders.